At ease, troops, and welcome to Panels of War, the podcast that covers war comics on all fronts. My name is Josh Johnson, and I'm going to be your host, and I'm going to be covering various war comics over the years from various publishers. Thank you for tuning in. This is the first episode, and this is also the first episode of a podcast that I've ever done on my own. So, thank you for tuning in. So I think that war comics have fallen out of the spotlight of mainstream comics for decades now, and they don't get the recognition that they deserve, in my opinion, because there's a lot of great ones out there, and war comics have been around since comics really began, you know, back in the 40s. You could argue that the first war comic could be Captain America, number one. So what I want to do with this podcast is just go through different war comics from different time periods from different publishers. So that's what I'm going to do. And here we go. We're going to go into the first story. I just picked something that I just recently discovered. And the first issue we're going to cover is going to be War Stories by Garth Ennis and Matt Martin. This is from Avatar Press, who I've never heard of before this. And this was released in 2014. So it's going to be War Stories number one, which is then the story itself is titled Castles in the Sky. And this is going to be part one of three. Credits for this is written by Garth Ennis, who I think a lot of people know had a really terrific run on The Punisher and Punisher Max, and more recently, Punisher the Platoon. Standards should be set high right away because he is a fantastic writer. Art is by Matt Martin. Color is done by Digicore Studios. Letters is by Kurt Hathaway. And the editor-in-chief is William Christensen. Looking at the cover to start with, we have a full frontal shot of a B-17 bomber. And we're looking directly at the nose. And we have four crew members staring right at us. We got the bombardier slash nose gunner. We got the two pilots. And we got the top turret gunner. They're staring right at us. And just the art on this cover is an indication of what you're in for, because the art is fantastic and this is a really stellar cover. It looks amazing. I also had a couple variant covers too. This one here is Buffalo Gal, and it is a scantily clad pinup girl like most bombers had on them during the war. So there's a couple variants of that. And there's also a special wraparound cover of a squadron of B-17s being attacked by Luftwaffe aircraft. And it is a spectacular cover battle scene. And this is also the same art that they use on the credits page also. So you get to see that twice if you buy that variant cover. Diving into the story, we start out with an unnamed soldier who has just embarked on a train. He just left his family, his mother, dad, and sister. We're obviously all very sad to see him go, because he's obviously going off to war, as he's on a train with several other servicemen. And it's aware that he's obviously going over, headed overseas. He must have just gotten off of leave, because he must have already done his training, because he has the three sergeant stripes on there. And plus, his journey is heading towards the coast, so he's going to be heading overseas. But as on this train ride, we have our soldier. He is narrating, saying, like, basically he's kind of really soaking in the just the way of the visuals of America, basically, because he's traveling on trains, and that's how the troops moved around the country. That was their main way of transportation when going between different camps and forts for their training. And that's what they would do. They would just go just on like endless train rides from one side of the country to the other. And he's taking in the scenes of the green hills and picket fences and rusting bridges and wide open rivers. And he takes various lines of trains until he gets to Chicago. And he is obviously very mesmerized by the sights he sees in Chicago. And he even says that he's forgotten all the name of every line that he's taken to get to Chicago, but he'll remember Chicago to the day he dies. So obviously he's not a city boy. He must be from somewhere, a rural area. Never says where. You can tell he's really soaking in the sights of Chicago. And eventually he makes his way to New York as he's walking through Times Square. And eventually he is put on a troop ship that will head over across the Atlantic to Europe. And as he's narrating, we learn that he is only 19 years old, which is probably an average age for a soldier back then. And he's basically saying how he is really absorbed the sort of like the culture of the American people. Even though he is American, he never really got it. And so he's on the troop ship heading out of the bay, and he sees the Statue of Liberty, and he finally learns what it means to be an American. Which that's a really good shot there. The art is really good on that. You see him and two other soldiers there staring out, and they are, yeah, they're glimpsing the Statue of Liberty, which is what probably like the last bit of America that a lot of servicemen saw as they were departing overseas. And for some of them, that would be the last glimpse of America that they would ever get. So, the next scene is very similar to the scene on the credits page where it's the squadron of B-17 bombers and they're just getting absolutely hammered by German aircraft. The art on this scene is, again, spectacular. Matt Martin really, really knows how to draw aircraft. It really knows how to portray these aerial battles. While it's not a dogfighting because bombers can't really maneuver very well, seeing them stand in formation as the Luftwaffe are diving in and taking them down is really spectacular. And then we see we have a B-17 in the foreground that just has bullet holes all over it, but it's still flying. But in the background, the rest of the squad is not doing very well. So we have about at least three B-17s are going down, and that's how a lot of missions went for the Air Force. So we skip to the next scene, and that is obviously some time has passed, and our soldier, who we learn his name is Leonard Whitmore, has arrived in England. We see him, he's in the barracks unpacking his things, and he's reading the instructions for American servicemen in Britain. So I guess this was a handbook that the military gave out to soldiers who, when they were in Britain, to basically tell them how to behave and how to interact with the British population. And then so he is interrupted, or he's summoned by, a runner, and he's there to take Whitmore to go meet his crew. And so we learned that the site that he is at, the base he is at, is in Tombrook, and it's the headquarters of the 707th Bomb Group, which is the group that he is assigned to, and he is going to be in the B-17 titled Valentine's Day, who have taken about a dozen trips so far, but the crew that he is going to be with, I guess they're all new recruits also. They're all the other crew that was sort of slapped together. So obviously something has happened with this B-17 before, where they needed a new crew. So Whitmore gets introduced to the crew on this B-17. Now, for those who don't know, the B-17 has a crew of 10 men. So you got your pilot and your co-pilot, obviously. You got your navigator and your radio operator. Your bombardier, who is also the nose gunner. Your engineer, who is also the top turret gunner. You had the ball turret on the bottom. You had two waist gunners, one on either side, and the tail gunner. So in every B-17 and other bombers like the B-24 had 10 men, a 10-man crew. So Whitmore meets his crew members. The pilot, his name is Keller. Lieutenant Askey is the co-pilot. Lieutenant Grace is the bombardier. And they go through all the names of them. It's not obviously not really important. Really, the only other important name really is going to be LaSalle, who is the starboard waist gunner. And then we learn that Whitmore is the port side waist gunner. So they're going and chatting, and then we learn a little bit more about Leonard. He was going to go to college until the Army asked for his services. So, and he was going to study medieval history, but obviously, because of the war, he was unable to go to at the time. So they are chatting a little bit among themselves, and they are interrupted by the returning B-17s. I assume that they were the ones that were in the action shot of the before this scene took place. And they say the first thing they say is, are any of them missing? And obviously, if you look at that shot, there's going to be a decent amount of them missing. At least three or four of them had gone down, if not more. So the next scene is an absolutely gorgeous shot of a B-17, the Valentine's Day, the one that Whitmore is assigned to, of them flying over the English countryside. And it is stunning. I can't explain it any other way. It looks like it could possibly be just like a photograph. It looks that realistic. Whitmore's narration basically gives the specifications for it, saying how the amount of bombs that it can carry, how fast it can travel. It can carry 3 tons of bombs, has 1350 caliber machine guns, has 1200 horsepower. Let's see if he could travel up to 180 miles an hour. And like without the payload, you can fly 2,000 miles without refueling. So just give sort of specifications for the B-17 if you don't know any of them. But I think it makes sense. And then they said about basically how they had to change specifications to lessen the payload and to add more firepower, because before they were trying to bomb, drop as much as they possibly could on a bomb mission, but then they would sacrifice the amount of weapons that they could carry to defend themselves, and they wouldn't have fighter cover, so they were just taking massive casualties. But then that they had to change their tactics, add more guns, lessen the bomb load, and make sure they add fighter protection so they wouldn't lose as many bombers. Because again, 10 men and a bomber, one of those bombers go down, you just lost 10 men. As they're flying around, like on their training, LaSalle and Whitmore have some wars back and forth, and LaSalle saying how he's too busy soaking in all the landscape that he didn't even notice all like the patchwork on bullet holes and stuff, and he wonders if anyone has died on this plane. And obviously it sort of affects him a little bit, because, you know, if you don't really think about it, like once you do think about it, it does kind of stick in your brain. Because who knows, you might be sitting where somebody else had been killed on a previous mission and they just patched the holes and then threw you in next. But as they are descending down to land at the base, they notice that there is a boy sitting on the hill, and apparently every time that they have done these flying missions and landed, the boy's been sitting there. So once they land, Whitmore decides he wants to go over and talk to the kid and see what's up with him. And yeah, he's basically saying how even though that these, you know, Americans are coming over there, like, don't feel like war heroes, because the English population has suffered tremendously over the past 4 years, 3-4 years, with the constant bombing of air raids during the Battle of Britain by the Luftwaffe. And, well, it wouldn't be at this point quite yet, but eventually they had the V-2 rockets. So these, you know, these children and, you know, even the women or older population, they're more battle-hardened, you could say, than these American servicemen, because they have been their country has been getting attacks for a couple years now. But anyways, so Whitmore goes over and he talks to the guinea, asks him if he's okay. And the boy basically says that he's waiting for his mom. She works as I guess as a cook or something in the base, in the airfield base. And it's revealed in the conversation a little bit that he's sitting out there, like, but he can't go into the base because, like, with his mother, because they only allow authorized personnel only. And even Leonard makes a little comment, it's like they can't let in an 8-year-old kid. How what harm is he gonna cause? There's no reason for him to sit out in the cold. But anyways, but he keeps talking to the kid, who learned his name is Ronnie, and he does not take a liking to Leonard at all, saying how the B-17 is a stupid plane and how the British Lancaster bombers are better. And Whitmore sort of replies saying how, and this is also good for, like, the audience to learn that the American Air Force, they do the bombing missions during the day, where it's they say that it's more dangerous going during the day, and the Royal Air Force would do their bombing missions at night. But there wasn't really that much of an advantage going at night. They suffered just as many casualties. But then Ronnie's mother shows up and sort of apologizes to Leonard, saying hopefully that her son hasn't been a pain in the ass. And Leonard's like, no, it's okay. And then he goes to give Leonard a, sorry, he goes to give Ronnie a Hershey bar, which that's what a lot of American servicemen did, like, because they could get it just, they just got issued to them by the military, like, they would get just cases of them. So they would go and they would give their candy and stuff to little kids who would be asking for it, or just any of the civilians, because they might not have much because of rationing and stuff. Like, even like the American population had to ration also, but bigger majority of the countries at war also had to do that. So Leonard has a nice gesture and tries to give it to Ronnie, but the boy does not accept it, and he's like, I'm not gonna take anything from a Yank, I don't want it. And he runs off. And then the boy's mother, who we learned that his name is Paula, she says, she apologizes for her son being rude, and that the boy's father was killed in Sicily the previous year during Operation Husky, the Allied invasion of Sicily. Because of that, Ronnie sort of developed a thinking that the British soldiers are better than anybody else, so he doesn't want to have anything to do with any American soldiers. And so Paula and Leonard sort of flirt a little bit, and she invites him for tea, which he kindly accepts. And after that, it's going to be Leonard's first mission, which was set for January 30th, 1944. This is obviously a standard bombing mission, because they did that for a majority of the war. They would just do bombing missions to, Europe, France, Germany, Netherlands, Poland. They would do bombing missions for that. So this is just a standard bombing mission. But on that date, January 3rd, 1944, two biggish things happened. First was the Battle of Cisterna begins in central Italy. The 3-day battle that ultimately resulted in a German victory, where they had killed 311 U.S. troops and captured 450. And then all in the Pacific, the Marines landed on Majuro, which is in the Marshall Islands. Upon landing, they realized that the Japanese forces have evacuated to other islands like Kwajalein, because there is only one officer left defending the island. Once he was captured, the island was secure. So that was probably the easiest landing the Marines had during the entire war. But anyways, back to our story. Planning, and they're getting a briefing for their first mission. They're told that it's going to be a milk run, which is basically, this is going to be no sweat. It's going to be a real easy mission. Their target is going to be an oil depot in northern France, and to use landmarks like the Normandy shipyard and the River Seine. Yeah, the troops are all like, oh yeah, this is going to be simple. And then give them more instructions to assemble at 14,000 feet, and then once they go over the get off the coast, and they should ascend to 26,000 feet, and that's what they should be at when they're over France. And just because it's a short distance away from home, don't think that's going to be it's going to be undefended and an easy mission. There's probably going to be flak and there's going to be enemy aircraft. So brace yourselves to that, but they'll have some P-47s to fly support, so they won't be left unguarded. And that's pretty much it for the briefing, but then we're shown the B-17s. They're assembling in line to take off. And Whitmore does a little bit more, gives a little bit more information just on, Air Force service, where your standard tour was 25 combat missions. It wasn't like your infantrymen, where once you're there on the front lines, you're basically there until the war is over. If you survive, yeah, you would get rotated in and out for R&R, but you were basically there the entire time with the Air Force. Once you reached the 25 missions, you were free to go home. I've listened to some veteran interviews, and I've heard that slowly over time they increased it, because once you were approaching the end of your tour, they would ask you if you wanted to re-up, which to me that's pretty standard for majority of the branches of the service. But I guess for the Air Corps, they weren't getting many guys re-upping. So what they would do then is they would increase the number of missions that they needed to go on. So instead of 25, it would be up to 30, and then 32, and then 35. It may have even gone up more than that. I'm not quite sure. But even if to go from 25 to 35 missions, that's like a 3/8 increase of your initial amount that you had to do. So that was quite a lot. But then we get a little bit more specification saying how they needed to wear their oxygen masks because they're up so high, because being up at 26,000 feet, there's no oxygen in the air. They have to use the masks. And stuff, and yeah. So, as they're lining up, there was an incident. The bomber, who is, I guess, in the lead, or at least at the next one up the line, named Monkey Business, as it's moving up, something happens, and it's never specified. In story, they say it's never specified what happened, but they think the bombardier in that lead plane must have accidentally set off one of the bombs, because what happens is as it takes off, or as it's moving to take off, that B-17 explodes. And there is an incredible splash page of this happening. You have the runway that has four B-17s on it, and then the one that's in front is exploding. And it's a tremendous explosion. Like I said, the art, even though it's a terrible thing in store, the art is really, really good on this also. And the explosion is so strong that it basically causes the bomber that's in the second position, which is Valentine's Day, Whitmore's bomber, it's such a big explosion and forceful that it basically breaks it in half. And has the entire front half, with including the wings and the engines, to basically go up at 90 degrees and fall down on its back end. And there's another shot, the next shot here, that shows it, that does show it completely falling. And then it shows the pilots and the plane behind them, their reaction. And so Whitmore and LaSalle, who is the waist gunner aside from Whitmore, They're basically scrambling to get out. Yeah, so they do try to get out, and so this is all sort of in one action. Like, they're trying to get out as the top is falling, and they get out pretty much just in time as it falls, and then leads to another explosion. And Whitmore gets away, but LaSalle gets sort of caught in that explosion, and he gets burned really bad. His coat and his clothing are on fire, and it's engulfing him, and he has really bad burns on the left side of his face. And then, yeah, then we see the back end of the front end of the Valentine's Day B-17 and now is collapsed on top of the rear end, which then the explosion that's triggered is the, I guess, the ammo that was in the back for that tail gunner caused that that secondary explosion, which affected the B-17 behind Valentine's Day. And at this point, Whitmore must have been knocked unconscious, because then he wakes up in the hospital. He has a bandage on his head, but otherwise he doesn't look too bad. And the doctor's in front of him and basically tells him sort of that the entire crew, his entire crew, died, including LaSalle, who got out but died of his burns because he was burned really badly. And that not only was his crew killed, but obviously the crew of the first B-17 that blew up first, but also that the B-17 behind them, their bombardier was killed, and both of their pilots were blind. So this is a horrible accident, a really, really bad accident that cost the lives of almost 25 men. And it's unfortunate that this most likely, well, no, I'm sure it's confirmed that stuff like this actually happened, where there'd just be accidents where there's equipment malfunction, a weapon malfunction, the poor judgment on, you know, the pilot's part, or something like that, where it's not even, you know, war related. It's not even in combat, where it's just something happens and the plane blows up or vehicle blows up, and that's quite a damn shame. I mean, war itself is bad, but the fact that these guys, they train for all this time and they don't even get a chance to even do anything before they're killed. But anyways, so the doctor says that to Whitmore that he got a little singed and he had the cut on his head that needed a little bit of stitching, but other than that, he's fine. And, you know, he's fine enough that he'll be discharged in the morning. Whitmore then asks what's going to happen to him next. And the doctor's like, well, they'll probably just find you another crew, slap you in there, and then you'll get on with the war. And then you can see Whitmore's distressed face as he leans back down in the hospital bed. Because obviously he's really messed up before losing his entire crew. And that's where the issue ends. So, the next issue is going to be Leonard in a new crew in a different B-17. And him sort of adapting in with a different crew, different airmen. But yeah, so that was the first issue. And I gotta say, really, really good, really solid issue. Garth Ennis, he really knows how to write, and he's a World War II aficionado, so he really knows his stuff. And I think Leonard Whitmore, he seems like a pretty solid protagonist. And I mean, it's a shame that he had this horrible thing happen to him, like, on his first mission, nonetheless. So, yeah, I'm definitely excited to see how the story progresses and actually see him in combat. I've already said it throughout the story, but the art by Matt Martin is gorgeous. Like, he really knows how to draw aircrafts, how to draw them in combat. The explosions, they're really spectacular. And the coloring too, the color by Digicore Studios, like, they really make it pop. And like I said, the art looks very realistic. Yeah, so to look at it, it's really gorgeous. So yeah, so that's pretty much all I have to say about this first issue. I'm really looking forward to reading the second issue and seeing how the story progresses and seeing Whitmore's involvement in actual combat. So, nowadays, you have to, like, rank everything, so I guess I better make sure I give this a rating. So I figured what I'm going to do is use the actual military ranking system as my ranking for each issue. So zero out of ten. So we'll do 0 out of 10. That'll be recruit. 1 out of 10 will be private. 2 out of 10 will be private first class. 3 would be corporal. 4 would be sergeant. 5 would be lieutenant. 6 would be captain. 7 would be major. 8 will be colonel. 9 will be general. And a 10 out of 10 will be supreme commander. So, with that ranking system in mind, I would have to give this the rank of colonel, about an 8 out of 10. I think it's, you know, really, really good. I wish we could have seen just a little bit of combat. I mean, we did see that one issue, but that one page of the bomber squadron that's on the mission that's returning. But other than that, everything else is really, really, really solid. So, yes, yeah, so I'm not going to do half rankings either. We're 8.5. Even though I probably would give like an 8.5, but I'm just going to stick with the whole number. So I'm just going to give it an 8 out of 10. So this issue is going to be ranked Colonel. Okay, so that pretty much does it for episode 1 of Panels of War. Thank you for anyone who listens. I appreciate it. Yeah, so the next episode is going to be covering the second issue of this arc. So if you enjoyed this, please look forward to listening to episode 2. If you haven't already, you could give the Facebook page for this podcast a like. It's just the Panels of War podcast. And if I'm going to make an email for this also, it'll probably just be panelsofwar@gmail.com. If you want to get in touch with me, feel free to send those through if you have any feedback. And yeah, let me know if you enjoyed it. Like I said, this is the first time I'm ever doing a podcast of my own. And I hope I did a good job and I hope people enjoyed it. So, yeah, so that's pretty much it. So thank you again for listening. And with that, dismissed.